now I feel a little bit more comfortable with saying, like, I'm worth this because I've done work that proves that I've put the work in behind the scenes and I've been working towards that. But previously, I'd be like, oh my God, I'm not worth anything. I'm just the person playing video games. Ah!
Welcome to Let's Play by the Gamers, a podcast hosted by actress Kylie Vernoff. Fans know Kylie best as the fiery Susan Grimshaw in Red Dead Redemption 2 and Miranda Cowan in GTA 5. Our series features some of the most informed and exciting people in the gaming industry today. Kylie and our guests discuss careers, gaming, and so much more. If you like what you hear, be sure to check out thegamers.com website to hear exclusive bonus material from each of our guests.
Hey everybody! Today's guest is the totally awesome London-based live streamer, Leah Viathan. Leah's been streaming since 2015, and she previously worked as a stream strategist and presenter for Xbox UK. She's so delightful and an absolute badass, and I cannot wait for you to hear this one. Leah, thank you so much for making time for this today. I'm so excited to talk to you.
No problem. Yeah, it's my pleasure.
Okay, so let's get right into it. Tell me about your introduction to gaming. Were you always a gamer?
Oh, I kind of had like a break, I guess, for a few years. But my parents were always into retro gaming. My dad had sort of the Atari. He'd kind of like prod me to play some of those sort of classic games, choose your own adventure, put the cassettes in, that kind of thing. My mum was massively into sort of more like console gaming, I suppose. So she used to collect all like the Sega Saturn, the Genesis, Dreamcast. She had like every console going, I think.
Oh my gosh, your mom is so cool. So much cooler than me.
She is. And then for Christmas one year, they got me a Nintendo 64. So I think propelled start into gaming was actually me playing Formula One Grand Prix, which is quite funny because I don't play racing games that much now, so it's quite funny to me. But I played a lot of that, Super Mario 64, and then I kind of had a hiatus for a bit. We didn't really have much money, so we couldn't afford any of the new consoles or any of the new stuff coming out, so we got a lot of secondhand games. Most of my mum's console collection was secondhand, so from like car boots and stuff. We had like a secondhand PlayStation. We didn't have any memory cards for anything, so we couldn't save any of our game saves. You'd get partway through Zelda and then you'd have to stop and start again next time. It was a nightmare. And then, when I was 16, I kind of begged my mum to buy me an Xbox for my birthday. So I got an Xbox and that was that, really. Yeah, I've been playing Xbox ever since.
That's incredible. Did you start playing multiplayer games right away or were you doing more single player style?
Oh, yeah, I was 100% multiplayer only. And until really I started streaming, I was very heavily multiplayer only. I played Call of Duty and Halo, and that was pretty much it for about 5 years. Because I was too scared to do story games. I was worried that I wouldn't like them, so I never tried them. Because I didn't have any money, so I didn't want to spend money on a game that I didn't think I'd like. Whereas I knew I'd like Call of Duty, so I'd always play that instead.
It's so interesting. I think that so many people have this misconception about gaming that it's a way for people to isolate, especially young people. But I hear stories like yours and it feels a little bit more like it's the opposite, that it's highly social, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, all of my friends now are through gaming. My whole life is revolving around gaming now. And I've experienced so many things and met so many amazing people through gaming that I wouldn't have met otherwise. So.
And do those connections feel more authentic to you? You know, I'll ask you why I'm asking that question. I've been following you on Twitter, getting ready to talk to you, because I knew that I would be out of my depth. And it's fascinating, too. I read something that you wrote that said, in real life, people listen to you because they want to say something. But on the stream, people listen because they want to know.
Yeah. I think it's funny because a lot of connections you feel in real life, often the people you meet, they're not people you've asked to meet. They're just people you've come across, aren't they? They're like people in your workspace, people who, I don't know, you wouldn't necessarily choose to hang around, but you just do. And a lot of those people, they're not interested. They're just interested in getting their point across. They don't really care. Whereas when you're streaming, the whole point of streaming is you're watching somebody else. You can't talk back to them. You can chat in the chat, But you know what I mean? Like, it's a full-flowing conversation with just the streamer. So I find it really interesting that you're sort of, I sit there streaming and I've got my like flow of consciousness going on, and people are forced to listen to it. If they click on the stream, they're going to have to sit there and listen to me. So yeah, I find that quite fascinating, really.
I love that. I wouldn't have thought of that, but there's a way that it's this authentic relationship because there's this automatic shared interest.
Yeah. And it's, in some ways, I feel guilty about that because I feel sort of almost selfish. I'm kind of, I'm there talking about me all the time and like not really getting the feedback of like a real life person conversation. And in some ways, that's actually made me worse, like socially. Like I've been doing acting classes recently with like the Meisner technique, which is all about like emotionally reading other people. And I've realized how I'm so out of practice with emotionally reading other people because all of my, like half my reaction comes from reading chat on a screen. So yeah, it's hilarious to me, really, but fixing that.
Yeah, that's fascinating. You know, I was talking actually to another guest on this show about how, you know, these games are so social, but you don't get to read facial cues when you're talking to someone, which I think is sort of a reason, and we can get into more of this later, but a reason that there is such a problem with trolling and bullying, because you don't see what you're doing to the other person. You don't see your insults cross their face.
Yeah, there's something, I mean, it is something I've learned with these acting classes, is how personal it feels when you've got a stranger in front of you and you are looking them in the eye. And some of these exercises involve provoking them with a nasty statement. And like seeing that on their face is so, so different. So when you're just like typing it in a chat, like you're going to really, if you're sort of a human being, you're going to empathize with what they're feeling. And that makes you feel bad. And you want to avoid that. So yeah.
Yeah. It's empathy building, right? It's empathy building. Okay, so when you're getting ready to do your stream, do you have any pre-gaming rituals, anything you need to do to get ready?
I am a last-minute person. I am constantly doing about a million and one things. So usually my pre-stream ritual is, oh my God, no, quick, close Premiere Pro, quick. Oh, maybe restart your computer, otherwise it's going to lag. Restart the internet, quick. Oh, go top up your makeup. Oh my God, no. Million things at once, and then I'll sit down, slam the start streaming button, run and make a cup of tea, and then come back just in time to switch the screen and be like, hey guys. So yeah, sometimes I start the stream and I'll be honest, I'm in such a hectic headspace that I sit down and I cannot settle into the game because I'm just like, oh my God, I'm still like in the mind space of trying to do a million things. So that's actually something I need to work on.
And it's a performance, really. I mean, you know, when you're sitting down to do your stream, you know that you're being watched. You talk about doing your makeup and stuff like that. Does that performance energy affect your ability to really enjoy playing?
Yeah, because a lot of streamers are different. For me, most of my enjoyment of streaming comes from the community and then talking to people. And my chat is, I mean, in my opinion, very funny. So I love hearing them react to what I'm doing and then seeing what they're up to. And yeah, it kind of does affect my performance because then I'm trying to like listen to the story of the game. But at the same time, I've got half an eye on chat and laughing at what they're saying and I'm not taking anything in. And in some ways, I mean, some people hate that because they just want to see you get engrossed in the game and they really want to see you enjoy the game. And other people just want to see you chat to them. So yeah.
So when people want to see you chat to them, I was so curious about this because there was another thing that I watched that you were advising people on Twitter where you were saying, you know, look, don't tip a streamer with an ulterior motive, right?
Yeah.
Don't try to develop a friendship or build up your own following by tipping a streamer. So
yeah,
what is an appropriate ask when someone's tipping?
So for most of the people I know and for myself, tipping is kind of a form of thank you. It's kind of just being like, I've enjoyed your content so far. I feel like, you know, usually the last 3 months I'd have paid, £30 for a Netflix subscription. You know, I'm going to throw that to you instead because I got entertainment out of watching you. So for me, that's how I feel it should be. If you're tipping me, it's because you feel like you've enjoyed the content enough that you want to give a little bit extra to keep the stream going in the future. For some people, they don't see it that way. For some people, it's kind of I've given you money, now you owe me something. And that's something I've really tried to discourage. And often I've actually kind of refunded tips and said to people, don't do it. I'm not interested in that. I'm not interested in taking your money under false pretense. I'd rather you just didn't. I'd rather not make the money.
Yeah, I have to say I was incredibly impressed with that, especially as a young businesswoman, for you to be able to set a boundary and say, I would rather not take your money if you're trying to get something that I'm not offering.
Yeah, and it might be like, I don't know, bad business practice. A lot of people would be like, wow, that's so stupid. Just take the money. Who cares? But for me, it doesn't sit right with me. And I had a point where a lot of the people I've met on my stream are now kind of close personal friends. I've met a lot of really amazing people. And there was a point on my stream where they'd be tipping me kind of like large amounts every now and then. They'd kind of be dropping £100. And some of these people, I kind of knew that financially, they weren't in an amazing place, you know? And I didn't want to patronize them and say to them, don't do that. You can't afford that. But I'm also not comfortable knowing that, you know, at the end of the day, I would survive if they didn't. And for them, that might be the difference between eating decent meals and eating noodles for the whole month. And that is, to me, I can't quit. I don't know. I can't, in my heart, I can't take that. So I would refund these people over and over to the point where I don't really get tips anymore. And I'm okay with that.
So you've been able to sort of shift your position from tipping onto your streaming partnerships and your endorsements. Is that right?
Yeah, so now I'm partnered with Ford, which is sort of an amazing partnership, really, with such a big company. And I work with them every month. And I kind of, and I was working with Xbox before this year, and that was ideal to me because I do find it interesting. It doesn't sit well with me when streamers sort of brag about, I've just bought a brand new amazing car. And often it's their communities who've sort of banded together. And I don't know, they've been the people to support them. And a lot of these people don't have very much. They don't have.
Yeah.
You know, they don't own a house, they don't own a car, they barely have enough to sustain themselves. And they see that person who they supported kind of bragging about the money. So it's one thing, you know, being accumulating a lot of money through streaming, that's like awesome if you're successful enough where you've done that, hell yeah. But don't throw it in the faces of the people who've then supported you, knowing that they don't have that much themselves. And that might not be a popular opinion, but that's how I see it.
I know that's really interesting. I would never have thought of that. I mean, it's a tricky balance, right? Because you do
Yeah.
get to know them on the stream. I find that just a little, even just a little bit, when you'll know the people that are coming to a Comic Con, and because they'll follow you on social media, you sort of get to understand a little bit about their daily lives. And so then you want to sort of protect them from overspending or.
Yeah, and then to go back to your previous point, taking sponsorships lifts that weight a little bit because then I'm like, I feel like I can say cool things. I can be like, look at this cool thing I bought, because I know it's not coming from people. You know what I mean? It's coming from a company who I feel much more comfortable with taking the money from. But that comes with its own complications. But yeah, there is certainly something to say for that, meeting your fans in real life.
And I want to back up a little to what you were just saying about how that it comes with its own tricky stuff. Because, you know, I think that a lot of women have a hard time sort of stating their worth and asking for compensation based on their specific skill set. And now that
Yeah.
you've moved into these partnerships, have you been able to sort of overcome that and say, you know, this is what I bring to the table and this is what it's worth?
I think having an agent definitely helps me with that because I am so bad at it. I just don't. It's especially in an industry like this where you a lot of the time you get lucky, and I got incredibly lucky to be where I am right now. And in the first year of streaming, my channel blew up, and that was luck. But now, over the last few years, I've kind of, in sustaining my presence online, I feel like that's where the kind of more the skill comes in rather than just luck alone. So now I feel a little bit more comfortable with saying, like, I'm worth this because I've done work that proves that I've put the work in behind the scenes and I've been working towards that. But previously, I'd be like, oh my God, I'm not worth anything. I'm just the person playing video games. Ah! So it's definitely a experience thing.
Yeah, I mean, and you are not alone. I think that sort of imposter syndrome always creeps in when you fall into something that you've got a passion for, but you also are really skilled at. And
Yeah.
then you have to balance, how do I monetize this? And what's an appropriate ask?
Yeah, and that's partially what pushed me into doing more acting classes and things like that, because for me, that's more of a it's I can track the skill, if that makes sense. I can kind of see where I've put the time and effort into succeeding in that kind of thing. Whereas with streaming, it's so hard to see what is something you personally have created for yourself and what is just being in the right place at the right time.
Oh, yeah. Yes. I'm so glad that you're taking acting classes. I really have enjoyed watching you, and I think that you do have just your ability to sort of show your emotions. I think that's going to be a fun endeavor for you, and I can't wait to see where it goes.
Yeah, it was one of those things. I was like, well, if I don't do it, I'm just going to kick myself and say, why don't you just try? And then I just said, you know, if I'm really bad, at least I know. At least yeah. Then I've scratched that itch and gone, that didn't work. Never mind. Let's try something else.
So do you feel now that you've got the sponsorships and the partnerships, do you feel any pressure to be like good at gaming?
I think I always have. I've always kind of held myself to a high standard of like, I've always wanted to be more, you know, over average at gaming. I've never been amazing. I'm not like the next ninja or anything, but I've always been, I can hold my own. And unfortunately streaming, because you're so distracted most of the time, especially with how I stream, you kind of have to let go of that a bit because you realize that you're not going to be playing your best. You've got half an eye on chat. You're playing at like 50% capacity most of the time. So it's something that I had to combat by playing games off stream more often, which I never let myself do for the first 3 years of streaming. I was like, no, you should be streaming if you're playing games. Stop being lazy. And now I'll play games off stream all the time. And it's nice because I can see my skill. Like I've been playing a lot of World of Warcraft. So I can see where I'm improving. And that's been, it's been nice. And alongside that, because I have the confidence now to know that I'm getting better at certain things, I don't care if I'm bad at other things. I don't care if I'm on stream and I'm playing badly. I'm like, yeah, it is what it is. You know, you can't win them all.
I have to say, you know, I had never gamed at all until I started working with Rockstar. And when they were releasing Red Dead, they sent me the codes for Grand Theft Auto just so I could learn how to use the PS4 controller and sort of in that kind of Rockstar way of this is going faster and this is shooting. And I will never forget the very beginning. All I had to do was like drive my car for Grand Theft Auto, just like drive my car. And I just kept hitting everything. I mean, I wouldn't even make it 3 or 4 seconds. I have a teenage daughter and she just would have her head in her hands.
It's funny though, because I mean, people do kind of underestimate, especially on Twitch, everyone's so used to seeing amazing players. They kind of don't realize that when they watch people who are just getting along in the game fine, they're doing pretty well, you know, like they're better than average. It's funny.
And it's so satisfying when I finally was able to just do that first little skill before the game really starts. It was kind of like their introduction. I felt so accomplished. I was.
And
so
that's when you're like, oh, I get gaming now. Like I understand the thrill.
Yeah. I really, really do. And I think it's similar. You know, you were saying like it's hard to track your progress as a streamer, but as a gamer, you really can get better. I mean, you can really see that your hard work is paying off.
Yeah, and that is one of the hardest things for me about being a variety streamer because I stream everything and anything and I don't spend enough time on one game to get really good at it. So, I mean, and that's partially my own choice because I know that I don't have the patience a lot of the time to like really go at one game. I guess maybe it's in my own head. I'm like, well, if you tried, you'd probably be kind of good, but I'm too scared to test that theory. But yeah, it's certainly... I'm playing The Witcher at the moment, and there's a lot of people coming into my chat who've played a lot of it, who are like, what's she doing? Why isn't she using this perfect method? Why is it? And I'm just like, I'm just vibing. I'm just playing the game, enjoying myself. You know, there's no pressure.
Do people ask you for, like, tips for how to get through a game and little cheat codes and stuff like that, or no?
Well, I used to play a lot of Destiny, so there'd be a lot of people who had kind of fallen off the Destiny bandwagon, and they'd come in and be like, oh, how can I level up quicker? How can I do this? How can I do that? And I was in a position where I could respond because I played a lot of that game. These days, last night somebody came in and asked me what the best armor set was for The Witcher. And I was like, I've not got a clue. I'm just here playing the game, to be honest. But luckily, because communities for certain games are so intensely involved with the game, they are usually in your chat and they can answer for you. So people do get the help they want. But for me, I'm just like,
Yeah, I have found that the passion of the fandoms are just overwhelming. I mean, it's like canon for them. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about being a female streamer. I saw another thread on Twitter where you were talking about how you don't even want to do, I think it's voice commands, right? Because as soon as men hear that there's a woman playing, things get weird.
Yeah, I hate talking about it in a way because there's so many men who've never experienced that. They've never seen anything bad happen to women in the games. You know, maybe they're quite respectful of women. And because they haven't seen that, their first instinct is to doubt that and be like, what? Why? I've never seen that happen. That doesn't happen. Surely not. And then some of these people then end up getting quite aggressive and being like, that never happens. And some of these people just ignore it. But for a lot of people, it's kind of off-putting to hear about it if they've never experienced it, because they think that maybe you're overreacting. And it's not until they see that firsthand that they realize, okay, maybe you're right. Maybe there is a slight problem here. But I mean, I was playing WoW again. We're doing our first raid. And as soon as you get on mic, I avoid being a microphone all the time. And I had to be in for this guild raid because you kind of need to communicate. And as soon as I said like three words, I had a dude messaging me and being like, you've got a pretty voice and all sorts of stuff. And I'm like, and then it started getting weird. And like, obviously in voice chat, people treat you a little bit differently because they kind of like maybe treat you with kid gloves a little bit. And other dudes see that and they're like, oh. And there was a comment by one of the people in the guild who just kind of said, I hate it when girls raid because this is what happens. And that makes them, they're put off playing with women because of other guys' behavior. And for me, that was the most frustrating thing. I'm like, oh my God, it's not my fault. I'm playing fine. I'm not being flirtatious. I'm just communicating very basically, very simply. And because of other people, that's your reaction. And
Yeah, that's, you know, it's funny. I now understand that whole thread. You were saying, it's not me.
Yeah.
Right? Like, talk to the other men. So if someone were to ask you what, in your opinion, could be done to help promote a more tolerant and inclusive climate in gaming, what would you tell them?
It's funny because I feel like the more you push for more tolerance and inclusiveness, the more other people push against you, because the more you try and promote it, the more other people are sick of hearing about it. And it means that the people in the middle kind of side with the people they like better, which often ends up being people they identify with. So the people who are in the middle of that discussion are kind of like, yeah, I'm sick of hearing about it. You know, just shut up, just get on with it. So I think it's a really hard thing to think about is how to improve that. For me, my tactic so far has just been to just exist, you know, like just exist, just be a woman in gaming, just continue to reaffirm to people that you can be a normal woman, you can like makeup, you can enjoy doing cool girly things, you can, you know, whatever the stereotypical girly thing people think of, and you can also play video games like a regular person, you know what I mean? So yeah. That's been my tactic, is just to kind of exist, I guess. And but a lot of people don't like that because that's passive and that's not being active enough to combat the issues we've got right now. But
I don't know that I would call that passive. I mean, forgive me for interrupting, but that staying in the conversation and holding your space actually is doing a lot of good. You know, you are in a very tricky position, right? Because you are out there and you are doing something you love. And so for that reason, you do become someone that other girls will look to, right? Mm. You will. And so staying in it and not shutting down and continuing to enjoy what you do, I think that you're affecting change. You're right.
I'd hope so. I do. There's always a sense of guilt, I suppose, associated with not being more vocal and not using the platform I've got to be more outspoken. But I do think there's a lot of times where it is counterintuitive. It doesn't work the way you'd want it to. It does just put people off. And I think, is that helping the cause? Is that helping it just be, I don't want special treatment. I just want normal. See, you know, I want things to be normalized. And yeah, it's walking a very fine line.
Yeah, I've heard from other women who also don't want to do voice commands, who will, you know, they'll play as like a male player just because they want to have fun and they don't want every time they pick up their controller to be a fight against the patriarchy.
Yeah, you know, and I have neutral names in a lot of my gaming things now. I go as just like a neutral name that's neither male or female, just to, you know, to really combat that. And it's funny because when I first joined this guild Discord, I was advised by my other female friend to change my picture on Discord so it wasn't a woman in the picture, so that people wouldn't automatically be put off. And I was like, that was just crazy to me. I was like, wow, like that. To think that we have to go to that level to stop people being put off playing with you, like, flipping egg.
Yeah, that is, right? Like, hide who you are. Yeah.
Really.
Yeah. So, you know, you've also been pretty candid about your struggles with depression and anxiety.
Yeah.
Which I'm so grateful for, because that's, you know, that's another area that I think people who are experiencing, they don't know who to talk to about it, right?
Yeah.
Like, it can be a pretty isolating condition, anxiety and depression. And I'm wondering, does gaming help you with that? Have you found it as an outlet to help with anxiety and depression?
I think it's a bit 50-50. Single-player games are often an act of escapism, and they can be used to further isolate yourself in a way. And that can be very unhelpful. But in other ways, it can get you out of your funk and distract you. So it's a bit of both, really, a bit 50-50. It's for me, it was more of an exceptional case, I suppose, because what brought me out of my depression funk was Twitch and streaming and the sudden distraction that growth on Twitch brought, because it was for me extremely sudden, and it was kind of like adapting to this new world. And a lot of my depression involved my situation. I had no money, I had no agency as a person, I felt like I didn't know what I wanted to do with my future. And for me, it solved those problems, I suppose. So it really helped my case, but that's not necessarily going to happen for anybody else. You know what I mean? That's so unique, that's such a weird thing to happen. So it is hard to say with gaming, because I think a lot of people, gaming is a community. A lot of people come to my stream after being into specific games. They watch my streams, they enjoy my like sort of upbeat personality, and that helps them be distracted. And I think maybe the act of gaming necessarily doesn't help depression, anxiety directly. I mean, it could for some people. For me, it didn't necessarily. But the act of being in a gaming community can. So I think that's maybe the important distinction.
Right. That makes a lot of sense. I've noticed that when I see a lot of the Red Dead fandom on Twitter and on social media, they all will make these friendships and then they'll try to get themselves to a comic con so that they can take the friendships out into the world.
Yeah.
You know,
I think that's the important part is the making sure that, you know, if you are involved in the fandom, is being active there and not, you know, letting yourself kind of, you know, isolate yourself further.
Right. Right. I think it can be a great practice arena, right, for people who might have social anxiety. A great way to sort of practice working together on a mission when they're playing games and collaborating.
And I've seen it in my community a few times. Some people, they have such bad social anxiety. Maybe, I don't know, maybe you drop into a community, you get along with people, and then you say things that are a little bit awkward and off balance because you're not quite, you know, you've not quite figured out how to talk to people necessarily because you've been isolating yourself for a while. It's hard. And I don't know, maybe the internet gives you an opportunity to start again fresh with another community if you have to, you know. It's not, I mean, I wouldn't advocate doing that, but I have seen it happen a few times. And as far as I'm concerned, if you haven't done any lasting damage to people, as long as you're learning yourself, then that's beneficial to you. And that's kind of fine for me. But yeah.
That's really well said. That's really well said. If you haven't done any lasting damage, then try again. Right.
Yeah. I mean, try again. It's not the end of the world. You know, there's people have come back to my community after being a bit strange in the past. And, you know, you forgive and forget, you move on. You say, that's fine. You were a different person back then. As long as you think you've learned from that, that's all that matters. You know, we're going to obviously keep an eye on you, making sure you're not kind of lapsing back into old habits. But, you know, life's about growth. And a lot of these people in these communities are in that really awkward stage between like 16 to 24 where you're figuring yourself out. Everyone makes tons of mistakes during that time. That's fine. And it's sometimes you need a sympathetic, understanding ear to understand that mistake, not let it happen again and move on. So you become better and grow as a person.
Yeah. I think that's terrific. That's another way that you can really help the people that are finding you, right? To just sort of be there and be mirror forgiveness and mirror second chances. And
And with that in mind, I mean, there was a drama a few years back with a website, which was an online psychology, like counseling sort of thing. So they approached a lot of streamers and they said, we want to sponsor your stream. We are an online counseling thing. And for a lot of streamers, you come, you know, you start your stream and there's a bunch of people being like, oh, I'm depressed. I, you know, even as far as saying they want to do something drastic, you know, and you're the only thing stopping them from doing it. And there's a lot of that and it's scary. And for a lot of streamers, that was a lifeline to be like, oh my God, yes, there's a counseling session thing I can push them towards. I can help them without, you know, with separating myself from their struggle, because you don't want people to rely on you. People should never, ever, ever rely on you as a person to fix them and to make them feel good about themselves, because that's, you can be a tool in their toolbox. You know, you can be somebody they can come to help themselves, but you should never be the cure for people, because that is that's not healthy for anybody. And this service really, for a lot of people, that was their dream. Like, oh my God, yes, I can push them towards that. I can take the pressure off myself. I can help people without it being about me. And unfortunately, this website ended up being a bit of a, not a sham, but a lot of the psychologists ended up being not trained properly. There wasn't enough vetting on the website. It ended up being probably not dangerous, but it wasn't entirely a good idea for people to promote that kind of service because there was no guarantee that what you were getting was genuine. And that's, to me, I found it as sort of an onlooker quite interesting because I was offered the same deal and I kind of turned it down because I did feel it was a bit kind of preying on gaming communities, knowing that there might be depression ongoing and kind of preying on that and being like, give us money, we'll help you. But I did find it quite interesting how many streamers were like, that was the answer to their prayers and it didn't end up working out, but that so many people embraced that said a lot to me.
Yeah, I know when our game was first released, a lot of the cast, we weren't prepared for what was going to come at us on social media. And we would get people that would say things like that in our DMs. And you sort of think, you know, it's tricky to know what to do. You don't want to ignore someone in crisis, but you also don't want to encourage it. You don't want to feed into it.
Exactly, yeah.
And I'm not a psychologist. That is a really tricky position for you to be in.
Yeah, it's hard on anyone, especially if you're somebody who genuinely cares about your community. You don't want to leave them out in the dark. What if you were their last reach out, you know? How awful would that feel to know that you didn't help them when you could have done? But at the same time, I've had it happen to me before where I've really tried to help people and realized that actually they would often, I don't know, project their anger onto me when then like they put me on a pedestal. And then because I act in a way that they didn't like, then suddenly I'm the worst person in the universe and there'd be so much vitriol aimed at me. And that is awful. And that's, you realize after some time that in reflection that that's not you, that's not your fault. That's them. They're having issues. And it's then trying to realize how to not put yourself in that position again.
Right. You're like, I'm a woman. I'm playing a video game.
Yeah.
I'm interested in your life, but I cannot save you.
Yeah, I can't fix you, but I can definitely, you know, be a smiling face if you want to see someone friendly. I can do that. You know what I mean? And I can do that genuinely and with my whole heart, but I can't fix your depression for you. You've got to do that yourself.
That is a really tricky balance. That is a really tricky balance. I wonder if there's room for some of these large streaming services to actually have someone that's been vetted, a place for you guys to direct someone.
Yeah, right? That'd be amazing.
Right? Yeah, it would be amazing. It's, you know, I think that's something that people should know more about or think more about or put resources towards.
Yeah, that would be amazing. So unfortunately, I guess it's such a big issue. It's so widespread. And with mental health being like devalued across many countries at this point, it's, you know, money being taken out of funding, it just becomes more and more of an issue. It's hard.
Yeah, you're right. All right, so let's lighten this up. What would you tell me is the biggest myth or misconception about what you do for a living?
I don't know. Probably that I make loads of money, like I make bank, because I certainly don't. I make enough to live off month to month. And I'm definitely, I held my hands up. I'm 100% better off than I could be otherwise. Like I've got savings and things like that. So that's amazing. But I'm not like making millions or anything like that. I remember one time the BBC reported that I had 150,000 subscribers on Twitch because they confused follower number and subscribers. And obviously a subscriber on Twitch, to anyone in the know, is like money. That's you know, potentially $2.50 or more a month in your pocket. So for some people going, she's got 150,000 subscribers, she's loaded. And that was heavily inaccurate.
Oh wow, yeah, that's a big mess up.
Yeah, it was pretty bad. But I think the, I don't know, I suppose the conception, oh, also I get asked a lot, so you get paid to play games? And I'm like, well, no, like, unless I get a specific sponsorship deal, I'm not getting paid to play the game. If I sit there and didn't talk and just had like my resting bitch face on, as always, and I'd played games, no one's going to pay that. You know, they're there for the entertainment. They're there for the personal factor. I'm entertaining people via the medium of games and they are paying me for that service, but I'm not being paid to play games.
That is a really good distinction. Oh, I like that. So what would you say is the best part of your job? Besides marmalade, marmalade is an absolute star, by the way.
Oh my gosh, she is. She knows exactly what to do as well. Playing up to the camera.
Oh my. She is a beautiful cat.
She is.
Gorgeous. And a
ham. She's lying next to me. She can hear.
But other than Miss Marmalade, what would you say is the best part of your job?
I think at the moment, in particular, it's the freedom of variety, which, I mean, I actually don't think that's something a lot of streamers would say, because I think a lot of people feel very trapped in streaming every day for hours and hours on specific games. But I'm so desperate to push out of that mindset. So now I'm like, because I'm doing these acting classes and I've got the freedom, if I want to during the day, I can go to an audition without feeling like I have to take time off work. I'm doing a podcast on the side. It all ties in with what I'm doing on stream. You know, it's all still gaming, but I get to research about games and I get to put it into a podcast and do my own work. I get to edit my own videos together and do whatever I want to in them. So for me, like, I get bored really quickly doing the same thing all the time. So I need variety. And that for me is perfect because I get to change things up whenever I want to.
Yeah, I love that about what I do too. And what would you say is the most challenging part of your job?
I suppose it's divorcing your self-worth from your performance, because you might have your lowest ever viewers on a stream, but you're being the most entertaining you've ever been. And that's because of maybe just factors on Twitch, the game, just stuff like that. You know, it's stuff happens. And it's making sure that you're not taking it so personally that you are putting yourself down and you're making yourself not want to stream anymore because of external factors. And it's really hard because obviously those things will all affect your income. And then if you don't have the income, you're not going to be able to continue streaming. You're going to have to find other work. And that's all going to mess with your head a lot. So it's trying to tell yourself constantly that you're doing the best you can. Continue going. Don't stress too much about the little details day to day.
I love that. I love that. It's so true. And you'll find this as you move more into acting, that separating yourself from your, it's impossible when you are the product and you go on an audition and you do something that you are so proud of and you were in the moment and you don't get the job. Yeah. You have to say that that's not a failure.
Yeah, it just wasn't me they were looking for, and that's okay. Like, and that's, yeah, I think, to be honest, I think the acting thing has helped that a lot, because I'm kind of like, I separated myself from the craft a little bit, because I'm kind of just like, well, if they're not looking for me, that's not necessarily on my performance. That's just, they've got a set idea of what they want, and I just wasn't that, and that's okay. And that doesn't mean you're a failure. That just means you weren't what they were looking for, you know?
Right. They wanted vanilla ice cream, and you can be the best strawberry ice cream in the world. But if that's not what they want.
Exactly. And that's, I mean, I don't know, that helps me so much. It helps me like get out of my own head and be like, shut up, carry on, just do your thing.
Yeah, that's great. That's a terrific perspective. So since we know from just, you know, being in a community, right? We're all in these communities of artists, and you're in the gaming and you're in the artists, and we know that we can't do anything just by ourselves in a vacuum. Absolutely. I would love to give you an opportunity to tell me about a time in your life or in your career when someone saw something special in you and gave you an opportunity to shine.
Okay, so this is kind of out of left field, I suppose. This is before I started streaming, I helped to run a motocross event. So I was a videographer. I went and filmed World Championship Motocross, and I helped to run a big event in the UK. And I was sort of a big part of the organization. I didn't really get paid for it per se. And I've just tried my best to like navigate this scary world. And I was young. I was sort of 19 when this was happening, and I had no prior experience of this. But we did it, and we put on a successful show each year, and it was really good. And one year the head of the organization that runs the World Motocross Championship came to me and asked and offered me a job with them and said, do you want to come and work with us doing what you're doing here, but on like a wider scale for all of the World Championships? And I was like, I was flabbergasted. I was like, what? That's crazy. What? And I turned the job down because it would involve a lot of travel, and I didn't think it felt right for me at that point in time. And if I hadn't turned that job down, I wouldn't be here now. So it's probably for the best. But I mean, at that point, I was like, oh my God, what? It was really cool.
I love that story because it wasn't even something that you wanted to move forward with, but still you were working hard. You were basically unpaid, and someone saw your potential.
Yeah. Maybe it was just a case of like, she's young, we won't have to pay her very much, which, you know, happens. It still feels good to me. So I keep that in my heart. And I'm like, remember that time someone saw you and thought that's good. And that helps me continue my stubborn adventures.
I love that. Well, I cannot tell you how delightful this has been for me. I really, I'm learning a lot from you. And I think that what you're doing is really important. And I think that stuff that you said about holding space, or that I said, but that I see in you about existing, right? That's what you said, existing here. I think that you are doing a lot of good and you're having a lot of fun. And I really, I am so grateful that you made time for me today.
Oh, thank you. It's been an absolute pleasure.
For me too. Okay, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Bye. I loved talking to her, and you can catch Leah's streams every Monday through Thursday on twitch.tch/Leah. To stay updated on her adventures, please follow at Leah Viathan on social media and check out her new podcast, Explorers Guild, available on Spotify, Apple, or wherever you listen to your podcasts.
Thank you for listening. Let's Play was brought to you by The Gamers, a community that connects all gamers who identify as women and welcomes people of all genders who support this. Let's Play was co-produced by Kylie Vernoff, Jenny Grossa, and The Gamers team, Laura Deutsch, Rebecca Dixon, Heather Awida, and me, Verna Maloney. Please visit thegamers.com for show notes, to access exclusive bonus material, and to learn more about The Gamers community. And if you liked what you heard, we'd so appreciate it if you subscribed and gave us a 5-star review. Thanks again for listening.